How good is your instrument scan? How good will it be when things suddenly go wrong? I'm Paul Platt, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature, and thanks for the download today. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, and also of Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated in Buffalo, New York area. Bob is an experienced flight instructor who sometimes has some views on safety topics that are slightly askew from what all the big corporate voices say, and we like to bring him in just to be a little thought-provoking here on Mondays. Bob, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Paul. It's my pleasure.
In the current edition of Over the Airwaves, the October edition, you mention instrument scan as a survival technique when you get into CLAG. Tell us what it is that people seem to miss about this, or why this is even still an issue.
Well, the instrument scan is an overworked term in instrument training. You know, our instructors are telling us, you know, develop that scan, be able to interpret the instruments, see what they're telling us, and that's all fine, and it's certainly important. But where it oftentimes begins to lose its effect, or where we as pilots fail in this regard, is when things begin to go wrong in the airplane. And that's when we focus on those things that are going wrong, and we lose that precious ability to monitor the instruments. Take icing, for example. And, you know, in icing accidents, in most cases, the airframe did not cause, or ice on the airframe did not cause the loss of control of the airplane. Instead, the pilot precipitated the wreck simply by not altering the control inputs necessary to deal with the icing. And the reason he or she didn't alter the control inputs was because he was more attuned to looking at the ice on the airframe than looking at the instruments on the panel. A loss of airspeed, for example, in level altitude with a given power setting is a surefire sign of airframe icing. So what must we do? We must be able to restore that airspeed. And how do we restore the airspeed? Well, if we have power, we can do it with power. And if we don't have sufficient power, we have to do it with pitch. And all of that pitch, power, airspeed information is coming to us from the panel that if our scan is not effective, we will not pick up to those subtle differences.
You know, there was a very interesting article in AOPA's email newsletter recently about a situation in which a pilot who was a CFI and an aspiring airline pilot had taken a job that included doing some flying in a beach twin, delivering medical supplies on a weekly basis. And it was on a route that, you know, frequently during parts of the year involved the threat of flying into icing. And this plane was not rated for flight into known icing. But he described a very tragic case in which on one flight, they decided that he was in the right seat. They decided they couldn't make their destination. The captain said, or the pilot said, he was going to turn back to a secondary airport, you know, one of the other options. Turned out that one was in bad shape as well, and they picked up a lot of ice. Long story short, they got down to the point where they had the runway in sight and were established on downwind for their second attempt at a landing, and they got that close and still stalled and went into a cornfield. And it was, you know, it was only at that very late stage of things that things finally went wrong. But this was a fairly veteran guy who knew the airplane, had picked up ice before, knew how it would react, and even he got into a situation where he was that close to it and apparently didn't keep airspeed.
All right, there's a lot of unknowns as you relate that story. The first thing that came to mind was you said he was on the downwind. If winds were fairly light or the runway was long enough, why bother going on a downwind when you can take a straight-in approach? Particularly when you're carrying ice, you don't want to be maneuvering, turning low and slow in the pattern downwind base final when you might have been able to go straight in. Again, the runway had to be long enough and the winds would have had to been sufficiently tolerable to allow him to do that. But here again, if we're carrying a boatload of ice where control is a real serious issue, I think from an aeronautical decision-making point of view, I would take a downwind landing and hope for the best, rather than to try to make a lot of turns in the pattern carrying ice. The second point is a veteran pilot was the airplane went into a stall. There's one surefire way of preventing a stall, and that is to keep the pitch attitude well below the critical angle of attack. And oftentimes when carrying a lot of ice, this requires a down pitch, I mean a pitch down towards the ground. And if we're so low that we can't endure any more loss of altitude without hitting the trees, then the problem then becomes very serious. But here again, we're test pilots. Anytime we have ice on the airplane, we are in fact a test pilot, and there's no rule book to tell us how to do it. But prudency might suggest take an off-field landing rather than making a low, tight turn carrying so much ice that we're unable to prevent a stall in the turn.
Well, these guys were in a situation, too, where they may have needed the downwind just to see where the runway was because their windshield was completely obscured and they had been unsuccessful in clearing it with alcohol. So, unfortunately, we might not know exactly what went through his head before that happened.
Well, let me just jump in here and say, Paul, and I'm guilty of this as well as anybody. Monday morning quarterbacking, of course, on the ground after the accident is pretty easy to do. I will say from personal experience, when the windshield's covered over with ice and you've got 3 inches of ice on the wings, I mean, you're doing everything you can just to process the information without, you know, losing it to stress and anxiety. It's a tough situation to be in.
Well, and I have to say, too, that I have occasionally engaged in these conversations when it was impossible yet to know or just too soon to know what the real cause of a crash was. And there are always people who will jump out and say, you know, this is insensitive to family members. It's it's destructive conjecture. And my reaction to them always is, you can learn as much from a hypothetical situation as you can from a real one. And there's no reason not to talk about these things just because we don't ever have a final determination factual of what may have occurred.
I agree. And I am guilty. I mean, I've been criticized for doing just what you've said. And I, too, believe that under various scenarios we can learn. But going back to the instrument scan, I mean, we have to know what airspeed to carry to avoid a stall. And if that means going downhill full power in order to keep the airplane aloft, then we have to do that. And the only way we're going to get that information is by interpreting the instruments just as if it was a normal flight. But, you know, if the airspeed begins to decay seriously in level flight, we have no choice but to add power, which oftentimes in these light singles, there is no more power. We're maxed out. And so the only other alternative is to pitch downward in hope that we have enough altitude underneath us to deal with it. And here again, it goes back to an earlier conversation we had in an earlier podcast about being sure that we have a back door anytime we do pick up ice on the airplane.
Bob, I want to stay on this topic, but I have a specific question to ask you in a moment about instrument scans. My guest is Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves. We'll be back in a moment. I'm Paul Plack. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
Do you feel stimulated? Hey, that's why Congress passed the Economic Stimulus Act of 2008, so loyal Americans like yourself would feel stimulated to help rev up the economy by spending money on important stuff like new Garmin avionics. We're talking potential tax incentives, bonus depreciation up to 50% in first-year cost allowances for qualified business use equipment purchases. See your tax advisor for guidance and your Garmin dealer for one whale of a stimulus package. It's almost like your patriotic duty, huh? Garmin, follow the leader.
At Cirrus Design, we don't ignore the fundamentals of aviation design. We just give them an ingenious new interpretation. The Cirrus SR20 G2. Interested in a substantial airplane that remains practical and affordable? Whether you're a non-pilot looking to begin flying lessons, a pilot needing personal transportation, or a fleet customer selecting the best plane to meet the demands of a multiple aircraft operation, consider the SR20 G2. To learn more, call 888-750-9927 or check us out on the web at cirrusdesign.com.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Bob Miller of Bob Miller Flight Training and Over the Airwaves, the journal for the proficient pilot, is Bob's internet newsletter. Bob, we've been talking about instrument scans as a survival technique in actual IMC. You have now been flying glass-equipped airplanes for a while. In fact, you have a couple of them on your flight line at your school. I have not had much experience behind a glass panel, and I've had no instrument experience behind a glass panel. Are these devices a big step up in terms of the situational awareness, or is it still possible to fixate on one part of the display like you could on one steam gauge?
No, I think, first of all, let me answer, I think, the first question. The glass panel airplane, from an ease of flying, is eons ahead of the round dials. Now, I had a lot of years on round dials, and I reluctantly moved over to the glass. It's like some of us old-time computer users were reluctant to leave DOS operating systems and succumb to Windows.
I still have a computer that runs DOS. Careful.
But once we put a mouse in our hand and could look at Windows, we don't want to go back to those old DOS operating systems. The same is true with the glass. On a glass, I don't know the exact measurements, but in a field of about 8 inches by 8 inches, we're able to put airspeed, attitude, altitude, heading, and vertical speed all within a very close proximity, all overlaying each other. So a blink of the eye, you can get an immediate interpretation of where you're going. Plus, behind that is a field of blue and a field of brown, you know, blue sky, brown ground. In fact, I had one up today, a brand new private pilot, first flight. In IMC conditions for over an hour, and I said, now I'd like you to trim the airplane for straight and level flight and go through the basic routine that we do with all first-time primary pilots. This individual, I mean, he nailed it. In IMC conditions, no less. He was totally comfortable looking at what appeared to be a sky and horizon on the big glass panel. This is far away ahead of the old glass ground dials, where the only representation you had was that attitude indicator, which was only 1/6 of the six-pack. Here we have that whole field of blue and brown ground behind all six instruments on a single screen. No comparison. Much safer.
All right. What about the fixation part? Is it still possible to get distracted by one corner of the display and have it pull you off your game?
You can. I mean, clearly you can fixate on anything, but behind the entire display is the blue sky and brown ground. So if on a round-dialed airplane you began to fixate on the heading indicator and neglected the attitude indicator or the turn coordinator, you could find yourself in a steep bank. In the glass panel, you can fixate on the heading indicator, but you cannot avoid seeing the blue sky and brown ground immediately behind it. And when that blue sky and brown ground begins to turn askance, I mean, that catches your attention no matter what you're fixating on. And remember, job one, particularly in instrument flying, is wings level. At all costs, keep the wings level. That's job number one. And then job number two is airspeed control. Wings level is automatic. I mean, you cannot avoid it. In fact, it's tough for us to go partial panel in a training environment, because unless we shut the entire screen down, we cannot cover up the attitude indicator, because it's the entire screen is the attitude indicator.
Well, and I guess, too, if looking at another common problem, if you were holding the nose level but your speed was deteriorating, eventually you would see a warning color come up on the tape on that side.
Yes, it surely does. And what would cause that? I mean, if we have full power, wings level, level pitch attitude, and we're slowing down, what in the world's going on? We better look out on the wings, and we would likely see ice. That's the only thing that I could think of that would cause that, or perhaps the gear inadvertently came down or some drag was imposed on the airplane, but that's unlikely we would hear that. But there are major warning devices that come off of the glass panel that those enunciators simply do not exist on many of the round-dialed airplanes.
In your opinion, Bob, is the industry paying enough attention to making the backup steam gauges or whatever the backup system is to the main glass panel easy enough to use?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we have airspeed, attitude, and altimeter as round steam gauges immediately alongside or below the glass panels. Those instruments we use routinely, and we do darken the screens. In fact, on my trip back from New York City recently with a student, we in IMC we blackened both panels, both the primary flight display and the multifunction display, both big panels. Solid IMC, we darkened them right down. It was at night, and I had the pilot fly on the wet compass for heading, and flew on the standby gauges for the rest, for airspeed, attitude, and altitude. Did just fine.
Well, Bob, it's going to be a challenge to adapt to any new technology. It sounds like that there's no question in your mind that the pros outweigh the cons on glass panels for this kind of application.
Well, just let me say in closing that I think from a manufacturing perspective, they probably are less expensive in the long run from the manufacturer's perspective, and they're easier to maintain. So that's why we see them on the new airplanes. But operationally, I don't think we can find a new airplane coming off of the line today, other than perhaps some of the more esoteric light sport aircraft, they're all coming out with glass panels, virtually every one of them. It's like the shift from slide rules that we used in the college in the 50s and 60s over to Texas Instrument calculators. You know, those were a lot of the professors wouldn't let us use those when they first came out. Now, I mean, you can't find a slide rule if you had to search for one.
Now, those calculators are mandated in elementary school math courses.
That's right. That's right.
Well, Bob, thanks very much for your time, and we always appreciate these discussions. We'll catch you again next Monday.
My privilege, Bob. Thanks.
You can find out more about Bob Miller and Bob Miller Flight Training Incorporated by visiting his website at overtheairwaves.com. You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.